So let's get started. And the crooked shall be made straight. Comes from a pasuk in Yeshayahu, Mem Gimel Hey, of which the called Kol Korei Bamidbar Panu Derech Hashem Yashru Ba'arava Mesila Lelohenu Kol Gei Inase V'Chol Har V'Givah Yishpalu V'Haya Ha'akov L'Mishor. V'harichasim livika'a, v'nigla kvod Hashem, v'ra'u kol ki Hashem. Prepare the way of the Lord, street in the desert, a highway for our God. Every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain and hill made, and the crooked shall be made straight, and the rough places plain. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. Here we have a description of, I'll say, a national geula, so pathway. Our pathway to geula involves mountains that will be flattened and crooked ways that will be made straight. Some people recognize made straight because Shai Agnon wrote a book, a famous book. One of his most famous works is called "And the Crooked Shall Be Made Straight." For our purposes, as an act to God made by the crooked coming straight, Hashem will try to get us there directly. But for those of who notice the words, me sure then has me thinking his name. I do when we look at the story. Witness that told he steals Esav's bracha. Esav calls him out on this, and it's very surprising to us that this is what happens, that suddenly what we think of as one of our avot would get ahead or try to get ahead by stealing his, by trickery, by tricking his father and taking his brothers and taking his brother at a disadvantage and getting his bracha. So I would like to begin with looking at Yaakov's birth, Yaakov and Esav's birth in this week's parsha. I call this a crooked rift. Tomer im kein lama ze anochi vatelech lidrosh et Hashem. Now she, of course, thinks it's a normal pregnancy. She's waited her whole life to become pregnant, and yet we're told that the children are wrestling within her. She herself just thinks she has a crazy hyperactive baby, and she says, "If so, why did I want to be pregnant? Why did I want this to happen if this is what pregnancy is like?" And she goes off to search for God, to search an answer for God. Vayomer Hashem la, Hashem tells her, "You have two nations that are fighting for supremacy in your belly." I'm not sure at that point if she understood that it was twins, but I think she understood there was a duality there. And she was told, "Virav ya'avod sa'ir," which most of and the younger. So the younger will serve him. So it's not necessary. Behold, there are twins in her belly. So that would be the answer to why it is such a strange pregnancy. The first one comes out and he's all ruddy and he's completely enrobed in hair. And so they named him Esav as though he is a soy, as though he is a ready-made man. He is already like an adult. V'acharechein yatsa achiv. And after that came his brother, V'yado ochezet be'akev Esav. And he's clinging to his brother's heel. Yeah. Yeah, Yitzchak is old when they were born. And so doesn't really sound like an auspicious beginning, but at least it's a dramatic beginning. Esav comes out first and he has quite the presence, but Yaakov's presence is noted by the fact that he's clinging. I guess we'll say it was like he got two for one in this delivery. On the push, two babies came out because the second baby was holding on to the first baby, and his name is Yaakov, quite simply because of the Akev, because of the heel, because of how it appeared. And yet we know as this Parsha continues, first, Yaakov manages to barter with Esav, or should I say Esav barters with Yaakov and is willing to give up his Bechorah, his birthright, in order to be able to get a bowl of lentil stew. And as the Parsha answers out, you need to make, and so that is the next one to just start with the big reveal when Esav returns. Before we can even begin with this, to take a minute to wonder, what is Rivka thinking? What does Rivka know that Yitzchak does not know? Apparently, what Rivka knows, besides her love of Yaakov, she was told v'rav ya'avod sa'ir. She was told that the sub river, so in it. There was something otherworldly about her. There was something very kind and gentle about Rivka that she did not want to confront him or did not think that was worth it. So, whichever way, Rivka encourages Yaakov to come in and get bracha instead. And when we think about it, I guess that else told anybody that. So it wasn't a crazy idea to think if there's going to be the bracha that remains in bracha. Clear if this bracha of Vayitein lecha Elokim Ital HaShamayim, the bracha of material wealth, was really necessary for Yaakov. At the end of the Parsha, there is the Birkat Avram, the one about
Half
in the land of Israel.
of what you
But
are saying,
certainly,
he can't hear.
yes.
He can't hear half of what you are saying.
You keep freezing every two sentences.
You can't hear me?
No.
You say a few sentences and then you freeze, and then you're probably still talking, and then you take up again
I'm
to
going to.
read your sentence.
Maybe you go out and come back in.
Okay, am I any better now?
I think so.
Okay, so I will go back to sharing. Thank you, and I'm sorry. Okay.
Oops. We don't see your screen yet. Your connection is still not good. Is your Wi-Fi working in your house?
Perhaps you shouldn't use the screen and just talk.
You're muted. You have to unmute.
Okay. Can you hear? I need someone to tell.
You're frozen
oh,
again.
Yes, yeah. We can't hear you still.
You're still choppy. You're on and off, on and off.
Oh.
If you can switch your Wi-Fi source to a hotspot or something else, that might solve the problem. Or switch your video off.
Sometimes Menachem uses his phone when he gets into a situation like this.
You still can't hear me at all?
We just heard you. We just heard you now.
Okay. So I'm not going to put on the screen then, and I'll stay like this. There seems to be that Esav complains that Yaakov has tricked him not just once but twice, as we see from the Ibn Ezra that the word by Ya'akveni, which sounds like he had supplanted me, it means he had deceived me. So suddenly the name Yaakov means more than just holding on to a heel. It means to be deceptive, which is what Yitzchak says. Ba'achicha b'mirma. Your brother came in trickery. Now Yitzchak himself says, Gam baruch yihyeh. He's not denying that Yaakov gets the bracha. He's just saying that your brother tricked you. And Esav says, yes, he's tricked me before and he'll trick me again. And when we think about it, this seems to be the issue for Yaakov. Whether or not he gets the bracha is not as disconcerting as whether or not he should have used trickery instead of just talking directly to his father. What his mother avoided doing, perhaps Yaakov should have just said, I bought the birthright. I am Yaakov. I get the bracha. And he did not. At this point, I would like to talk about the consequences, because the consequences seem fairly obvious, I guess, as you look at Yaakov's life. Even though Yaakov does get Vayitein Lecha HaElokim Mital HaShemayim, Yaakov is wealthy. And Yaakov is a big person. This bracha does stick to him. But the consequences of taking the bracha, the Yaakovness of it, stays with him for all the stories moving through Sefer Bereishit. For example, next week when he meets Rachel and he wants to marry her, what happens? His father-in-law, Lavan, switches the daughters. So here, Yaakov, the younger son, who dressed up as the older son to trick his father, is now tricked by his father-in-law, who dresses up the older daughter as the younger one to marry him. A complete flip. And in fact, the slap in the face of it all is the fact that that Lavan, who is a tricky guy, gets all self-righteous about it and says, "Lo ye'asachein bimkomenu." We would never hear la'teit ha'tzi'ira lifnei ha'bichira. We would never give the younger before the elder. We would never disrespect the elder. What mussar is it for Yaakov? Again, in the end, he'll marry both sisters, and this will determine the nature of his family and the drama in his family moving forward. But for him to be given the older daughter dressed as the younger, when he himself dressed as the younger in order to get the blessing of the older, the Torah is telling us that's where the problem lies. We move on to the story of him leaving. He leaves Laban's house. And for Yaakov, who was told that he lakach the bechora, he took the bechora, he took the bracha, and now in Yaakov leaving, the house of Laban, there is lots of Vayignov, Vayignov. Rachel takes the Trafim. Yaakov is accused of taking Laban's heart. And when it all comes down to it, at the end, when Laban searches and searches, even though Yaakov says death to anyone who has it, I don't believe anyone has it, Laban searches everywhere. When he gets to Rachel's room, it says, Vayimashesh Laban et kol ha'ohel v'lo matzah. Laban checked her whole tent and couldn't find it. What does that remind us of? Yitzchak said to Yaakov, Geshana v'amushcha b'ni, come here, let me feel you, son. And Yaakov tricked his father, even with the act of feeling. Rachel tricked her father with the act of feeling, but unfortunately, Rachel's act has consequences in regard to Yaakov's curse on anyone who would have taken the Trafim. In the next scene, we're going to skip a scene for a minute. Next, we're going to move on to Vayishlach. And in Vayishlach, Yaakov's sons, I'm going to say they fool him, but they trick the people of Shechem. And we're told, Vaya'anu b'nei Yaakov et Shechem v'et chamor aviv b'mirma v'yedabru asher timei, et chamor aviv b'mirma v'yedabru asher tima et dina achotam. This time Yaakov gets the wool pulled over his eyes as the deal he made with Shechem and with, he made about Shechem that everyone should have a Brit Milah, his son, or that they should have some peaceful existence. His sons come do a whole trick on him, on the people in Shechem. They should have a Brit Milah. Then they go in and massacre the city. And again, we have this word b'mirmah, that it's done in a tricking your father kind of way. And though it is a great rescue for Dinah, it's something that Yaakov dreads afterwards because he's afraid that all the natives, now when he moves back into Eretz Canaan, everyone's going to be out against his family, that they're going to be out to get him. And the truth is, this also sets a tone then for how he feels as he's coming into this land feeling like he should feel like he has he's the moral high road. He's the person who's the monotheist. He's the one who's following in Avram's paths. Instead, he's got this massacre, this deal that he made that was not kept because his sons tricked him. And finally, I think the ultimate harm to Yaakov from his trickery is in how his sons tricked him. His sons, Vayikhu et ketonet Yosef, v'yishchitu si'irizim, v'yitbalu et ha-ketonet b'dam. Here is Yaakov, who has a bechor in his family, a firstborn who really is his youngest, Yosef. Just as Yaakov was the young bechor in that he took his father, he stepped over his older brother to get a blessing. He and his own family established that the youngest child or the younger, what Yosef was the bechor over his brothers, is the firstborn with all those rights. And when the brothers want to get rid of Yosef, they take Yosef's coat and they dip it in the blood of a goat. How reminiscent is this of Yaakov's own behavior? He took his brother's coat. He wore the skin of a, he wore the fur of a goat. And it's these exact elements. You can't get anything more literally damning than that. That the coat, the goat, and the young Bechor are all in a scene again. This time against Yaakov. And while Yaakov may have tricked his blind father, Yitzchak, that Yitzchak couldn't tell, his sons trick him with a visual also. They show him the coat that has the blood of the goat, and they say, look, what do you see? And Yaakov's vision tricks him in that he says, oh, it's Yosef's coat. It must be that he's dead. And the consequence of it is Vayevk oto aviv. And his father cried for him. Here is Yaakov crying from the coat and the goat and the firstborn child, because he is tricked with his vision into believing that his son is dead. Not that it was such a night of Mila that his son was in slavery, but that's a whole other thing. But in terms of it was as though a scene was being replayed to him using the elements of trickery. He loses Yosef, his youngest Bechor. And again, within there, not just the cry of Esav that now Yaakov is crying that way, but even the fact that when his sons come to him and they say, Hakerna, Haketonet, Binchahi, Imlo, do you recognize, is this the coat of your son or not? This reminds us of when Yitzchak says to Yaakov in the beginning of the bracha, Gashana va'amushcha b'ni, come close so I can feel you, my son. Ha'ata ze b'ni Esav imlo, or not. So here again, there's this, is it or isn't it, that even Yaakov has to deal with. So now, what is this journey for Yaakov? Yaakov is described in the beginning, in this week's Parsha, as an ish tam. An ish tam could be anything from simple. When I think simple, it's not simple like he is incapable of thinking, but simple as in straight, as in everything, nothing crooked, just simple. And here we have, instead of it being simple, he kind of upended his life in the trickery that his mother had encouraged with him. And certainly this trickery keeps on reverberating through his life. This nin Yaakov, Yaakveni ze pa'amayim, that he's tricked me twice. He took my bracha and he took my bechora. What's going to be? Is this it for Yaakov? He's gone against his nature. So there is a beautiful scene in Vayishlach in which I would like to say that perhaps Yaakov gets to be born again. I'll call it a corrective rebirth that in some way has the potential to erase the path. And that, of course, is his wrestling with an angel. The scene is set that Yaakov has his family separated in order to prepare for Esav's arrival, and Yaakov crosses back over the water to get some items that were left behind. Water, I'll say, is like a womb. He's going back into the water. And when he's in this water, Vayeavik ish imo ad alot hashachar, there is a man, we could say it's an angel, we could say it's Saroshel Esav, but there is a wrestling match that happens. Here Yaakov is back in the water, back in the womb, he's passed through again, he's wrestling. Vayarkilo yacholo, vayiga bakaf yirecho. And this time, instead of Yaakov grabbing for a heel, the angel or the ish grabs for Yaakov's leg, and Yaakov is the one who is affected by that grab. Instead of being the grabber, he's the grabbee. And now he has that womb in his leg. Orpher would find out about that. And he says to this, I'm not going to let you go until you give me a bracha. So here we have Yaakov in a scene in which I'll say it was like he went back to the womb, wrestled again. This time he comes out on top with a bracha. And so what does the man say to him? Mashemecha, what's your name? Vayomer Yaakov. He says, my name is Yaakov. Vayomer, lo yemer od shimcha, ki im Yisrael, ki sarita im Elokim, v'im anashim v'tuchal. You're no longer Yaakov, even though Yaakov still goes by that name. It's not like Abraham, it's a permanent switch. But you are now, you've just become Yisrael. Through your rebirth, Bahaya Ha'akov Lemishor, that you, Yaakov, are now going to come out the right way and start again. And so before he meets with Esav in a resolution of the tension of the bracha and the bechora from Toldot, in Parshat Vayishlach, he has the opportunity to be born again, and this time not to be Yaakov, the tricky one, but to be Yisrael, the straight one, the one who proves himself directly. He wrestles and he wins. Kisarita im Elokim v'im anashim v'tuchal. Because Yaakov, you can do it. You can do it by a face-to-face confrontation. And this indeed does prepare Yaakov for his confrontation with Esav, in which they end peacefully. And both of them are satisfied with what they have. Esav no longer feels like he is cheated by Yaakov. He has what he has. Yaakov even offers him back, take my bracha. And eventually Esav accepts the gifts and they part ways peacefully. And so this is indeed in Yaakov's journey, his personal redemption, that he gets to become Yisrael. Unfortunately, him becoming Yashar is, to a certain extent, not when he's done with the consequences of his trickery, but it is, to a certain extent, a rebirth, a chance to make things right with Esav. In terms of the flippings, I would just like to say, while we're talking about straightening up, that even though Yaakov is tricked by a flip with Rachel and Leah, and tricked by a flip with from the brothers with Yosef and the dress up and the mixed who's what, we see at the end of Yaakov's life that he is able to resolve the flipping or the switching versus the trickery. What story is there at the end of Yaakov's life? At the end of Yaakov's life in Mitzrayim, he has the opportunity to give a bracha to his grandsons, to Ephraim and Menasheh, who, as Yosef's first two, are the ones who are given their own, so to speak, tribes. They're being counted as Yaakov's actual descendants instead of just children, instead of grandchildren. And in that story, as we all know, Yosef brings Menasheh and Ephraim in front of Yaakov, and Yaakov switches his hands. And you can only imagine that in Yosef's head, he's thinking, not again. This doesn't end well when we switch the older for the younger. This is going to be another bloodbath. Have we not already sacrificed my life in terms of trying to promote me ahead of my brothers, and then my brothers are jealous, and then there's consequences that, you know, take 20 years for us to fix, and now I'm giving you my two sons, and again, you're switching them around. But in this story, he is Yisrael. And in this story, he says, Yadati b'ni yadati. Yosef confronts him and says, Dad, you're switching the sons around. And Yaakov answers, I know. This is not by trickery and this is not from blindness. He says, it is known. This is not a mistake. There, everyone in this room is aware. Gam hu yihye la'am, gam hu yigdal, Ulam achiv hakaton yigdal mimenu v'zaro yihye melo hagoyim. At the end of Yaakov's life, it seems, the lesson of trickery versus plan, it becomes a little bit more clear. He understands that while, and we could say this for all of Sefer Bereishit, the stories in Sefer Bereishit, even though we have laws in the Torah about the right of the firstborn, it does not seem like anybody in Sefer Bereishit is a firstborn who's getting his rights, right? If you choose between, Yitzchak and Yishmael, between Yaakov and Esav, Yosef and his brothers, the lesson doesn't seem to be, even Moshe, by the time we start with Shemot, is already still coming out ahead to a certain extent than his older brother. Seems to be that through Sefer Bereishit, we're told a lesson about the choice, Bechira versus Bechora, firstborn. And I think Sefer Bereishit does teach us a certain element of choices being made. So it's the right that we're going to go by values instead of going by age order. But within that, I think Yaakov messed with, I guess if this was like a fantasy book, we'd say like the time quantum, whatever, that he was doing it in trickery. Instead of making it be known, when Abraham chose Yitzchak after Hashem had already said, "Ki b'Yitzchak yikarei lechazara," Abraham sent away the children of the plish, of his pilakshim and gave everything to Yitzchak. It was not something that was done that no one knew about. And with Yaakov, this seems to have been the challenge. I would like to think that Yaakov, part of his personal journey, was going switching from Yaakov to Yisrael. And certainly I think that even somehow at the end of the whole story of Mechirat Yosef, he came to recognize that trickery was not the way to go. And that switching is one thing, tricking is another. And with that, I would like to recommend another option. In this week's Parsha, Toldot, anytime we see Ekev or Yaakov, has to do with Yaakov, except for one place. When we find out about how worthy Yitzchak is, we find out that when there is a reason for Yitzchak to leave the land of Israel, Hashem tells him not to go. And then begins to tell Yitzchak about all the bracha that is coming to Yitzchak. And the words are, Ekev asher shama Avraham bakoli, v'yishmor mishmarti mitzvotai chukotai v'toratai. In English, we would just say, since Abraham had all this because he followed my ways, that's why you have built up such zechut avot. You have all good things coming to you. You do not need to leave the land. You are not in any danger because of what Abraham did. And the word that's used is Ekev. Again, Ekev, when it came to Yaakov, was the heel that he grabbed to, which was grasping. But in the case of Abraham's description, it doesn't seem very grasping. It seems like very, I will say, straightforward, quid pro quo. Because Abraham followed in my ways, Yitzchak, you are going to be the recipient of all the blessing. And in fact, the Academia LeLashon Ivrit, so this is the Hebrew Language Academy in Israel, does say that Ekev is because of the heel, but we say v'ikvot, as in your following, that we could say maybe let's take an aspect of Yaakov that's not about tricking. Let's hope that Yaakov also, even in the name Yaakov, has this aspect of following God's way, the destiny of the Jewish people, starting that path. And in next week's Parsha, or next week's Haftarah for Vayetze, which is the end of the book of Hosea, it ends with a very interesting idea. Mi chacham vayaven ele, navon v'yedaim. Who's truly wise will understand this? And what is it? Ki yesharim darchei Hashem. Because God's ways are, so English says upright, but upright would imply a certain street. God's ways are straight, v'tzadikim yalchuvam ufoshem yikashluvam. Tzadikim are able to follow God's path, but sinners fall off of it. Now, honestly, there are two ways of looking at this path, right? Why is it, what's so difficult about walking on a straight path? That shouldn't be a difficulty. So there are those who think of it in terms of being like a test for people who have drunk driving. Right? If you pull over someone who's intoxicated, and this is what I've heard police officers do, they ask the driver to get out and they ask him to walk on the yellow line. The yellow line in the middle of the street is generally straight. However, someone who's intoxicated cannot walk the straight line. This is one way of looking at that pasuk. One way of looking at the pasuk is that God's ways are straight, but someone who is not bought into God's ways finds it difficult to follow that path, not because the path isn't straight, but because what the person brings with them, in the case of the drunk driver, the intoxication, keeps them from being able to keep the straight path. However, I would like to maybe see it the other way. Certainly we've had a couple of years here in which you can't really say that God's ways are straight. I think when we look at the history of Jewish people, it's very simplifying to say God's ways are straight. I don't think that we've made it from point A to point B in a straight line. I think that there have been many ups and many downs. And perhaps God's ways being straight has more to do with faith, taking the big picture, than it has to do with how straight the line is. And perhaps it is that when we say Yesharim Darchei Hashem, maybe it's the fact is that because of the Ekev, because of the following, because of Yaakov's tenacity, let's say, this idea of being tenacious and being able to follow through anyway, to keep on going, to be told that there's, you know, you're going to go out, you're going to leave the land, you're going to come back again, you're going to go out, you're going to leave the land, your children will come back again. This tenacity, I'll call this quality of Ekev, not just a grasping for someone else's things, but literally a following, a clinging to the path, be'ikvot, because this is the way you're going to be able to make it through. Because it's not necessarily that v'haya, to get to the point, I guess I'll say, when we get to a point, v'haya ha'akov l'mishor, that the crooked will become straight. That would be, I'll call it the ultimate redemption. But along the way, ha'akov can kind of hold on to the path so tight that he can follow it, whether or not it is straight. As a complete side note, but related, the Netziv, when he talks in his introduction to Sefer Breishit, actually refers to Sefer Breishit as Sefer Hayashar. And again, Sefer Breishit does not seem so yashar when you think about it. There are, you know, I think it is a very up and down story. For every family story, there's nothing straight about it. Starting from Adam and Chava, Cain and Hevel, Noach and the world, we have, again, as we said, Abraham's challenges within the land. Abraham and Lot, are they going to live together? Abraham and his sons, Yitzchak and Yishmael, Abraham's wives. We have Yitzchak, but Yitzchak himself, who is the recipient of blessing, he has the sons that he, it's a choice. Then comes the full drama of Yaakov's children. There is, doesn't seem to be anything yashar about it. So what is the yashrut? So according to the Netziv, the yashar is following the way of God. Whether that means in terms of a certain, inherent menschlichkeit in which Abraham treated nations around him, the way that he tried to bring God's yashrut into the world, whether it's Yitzchak in his dealing with Avimelech, it's even could be Yaakov in the way he ended things off with Lavan and with Esav in the end. Even Yaakov and Paro. Yaakov trying to fix it with his sons. But the fact is the idea of being Yashar doesn't necessarily have to mean straight or flat. I would like to perhaps suggest that Yashar has to do with Hashem, who is Yashar. Lahagid ki Yashar Hashem. The fact that following he who has set the standard, whether it is the belief in him, the idea of respect of people and of God based on the fact that people have the image of God within them, the fact that there's a certain correction that's going to have to come into the world, perhaps being the vehicles of that correction. But either way, we have from this week a very crooked start for Yaakov. Yaakov is named Yaakov, and within our Parsha, his brother accuses him of being tricky. His name seems to be that he is clingy. He's being accused. His father says he came by Mirma. Certainly, as we look at the Yaakov stories, the Mirma comes back to get him. The Mirma keeps him from having what we would call a linear existence. Everything has to be more difficult for him. Everything comes with consequences. Yaakov has the opportunity to become Yashar when he becomes Yisrael. And certainly as he moves forward, he tries to go about things without blindness and without tricking, with making things known. And only at the end of his life is he successful with that. But in terms of being Titein Emet, Yaakov, that there's a certain amount of truth and I'm going to say, trying to think of what, resilience, I would say tenacity. That's the word I was using, tenacity, that Yaakov represents, and perhaps that's part of the Yashar too. Certainly when he became Yisrael, it became because of his tenacity, that he wouldn't give up the fight. And I believe that, I would love to say that us as being B'nai Yisrael and being in the land of Israel, that aspect of tenacity and not giving up and wanting to be able to bring, you know, we say that Yaakov is the element of Emet, but also we say Emet Hashem Le'olam, to be able to bring the truth of God to the world and to be able to, I know that, you know, throughout history, everyone says the Jewish history, the Jewish journey, which is definitely a crooked up and down path, shows the hand of God in history. That is us under the name of Yisrael. My timing is very strange this week, but I think that brings me to an end. I'm sorry about all the technical difficulties. I really hope you were all able to hear, and I would love to hear if anyone wants to unmute and make a comment. I'm all for that.
What was the perek in Yeshayahu where it talks about the crooked road?
So the perek in Yeshayahu is Yeshayahu 40. Pasuk 3 to 5. Yeshayahu Mem Gimel to Hey. I happen to have this wish that that, I mean, look, we always say about Jewish history that in the throes of it, it seems so impossible, but yet we always in hindsight are able to appreciate how in the end we still, you know, whoever thought we would come out on top, whoever thought we would still exist. But perhaps that's a description moving forward also, that maybe all the bumpies at a certain point when we hit that moment of Geula, the bumps will kind of narrow down and there'll be less of this and more of this, that we should not just see backwards how we got here, but we should be able to look forward and see how we get there as well.
Leia, thank you very much. Especially, I really enjoyed your deep dive into Akev, Ayin Kuf Vav, and how you dissected it and pulled it out, stretched it out, and showed its inner workings. And I especially liked that you highlighted the Akev Asher Shema, which is...
Yeah, I feel for Yaakov. He doesn't really get off well in this week's Parsha. That's the honest truth. Like, just, and it's very hard for us as a people to feel like we did something like that, or whatever is it, based in some sort of dishonesty or in trickery. And maybe it wasn't ours. So I would like to I'd like to look at this through a prism of many different ways of hoping that Yaakov, let's call him tenacious instead of tricky. And in general, the bracha that he needed was given to him anyway. But certainly we see, you know, again, there were consequences in his life for the action, but the consequences weren't that he lost his primacy. The consequences were that he lost his sanity, perhaps, that he lost the easy way, and it became crooked for him as well. This Shabbat is Shabbat Mevarchim Kislev. This is a month of Nisim v'Niflaot. I'm going to hope this month gives us a lot of Nisim and Niflaot as well here. Bayamim ha'heim u'bazman hazeh.
I loved your idea of Yaakov being the rebirth of Yaakov in the whole story of him wrestling with the angel. Where did you get that from? What is that based on?
I attended a shiur in Israel last year about Yaakov, and I it was given by Rav David Sabato.
Oh.
And I can't, he doesn't have a book printed, and also I can't tell you where my imagination picked up versus what he said. But at that moment, there was some sort of connection that was made.
It was beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. I think for
Thank
me, it's
a much.
Resolution of what the point of the story is, because it is a weird story. It's a very strange story without some sort of framework for the elements of it. Like in the middle of this to just have his name changed, I feel like there was more going on than that.
Thank you very much, and Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. I'm going to shut off. Is that okay?
Yes,
thank you
so much.
Wonderful.
For joining.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Shabbat Shalom. Chodesh Tov. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Chodesh Tov.